Welcome to the weekly broadcast of Let's Talk About It, produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5 radio. Let's Talk About It is directed by Mario Espinoza with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. This program brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. And now let's join our co-hosts, Patricia Arevalo Caro and Alfonso Ruiz, for today's program.
Welcome to Let's Talk About It, a radio show and podcast brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, where we explore the depths of mental health, well-being, and self-care. I'm your host for today, Alfonso Ruiz, and each week we'll be having real conversations about the challenges we face, the strategies that help us cope, and the ways we can help find peace in our busy lives. Whether you're here to learn more about mental health, looking for support, or just need a little inspiration, you're not alone. This is a space to share, heal, and grow together. Whether you're living with mental illness or supporting someone who is, remember, help is always available. And seeking help is a sign of strength, not weakness. For services, you can call 442-265-1525 or toll free 1-800-817-5292. Services are tailored to your needs and remain confidential always. So take a deep breath, get comfortable, and let's dive in. This week we have Claudia Quintanilla, behavioral health therapist, to discuss the importance of men's mental health. This is such an important topic, and for you to hear more of future topics, you could join us Thursdays at 8 a.m. on Radio Bilingüe on 88.7 FM, Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. on KXO AM radio station 1230, and on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. on KXO Radio FM 107.5. So it's about that time. We're going to take a deep dive into men's mental health. But before we get started, I want to just talk to our special guest today, Ms. Claudia Quintanilla. We're happy to have you here with us. I'm excited to interview about this topic. But before we get started, I want to know a little bit about you so the community gets to know you as a person. What drives you to work here at Behavioral Health, doing the clinical work that you do, serving our population, just a service that's so important for our community. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Claudia.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Alfonso, for having me here. It's a pleasure to talk about, on a such important topic. Well, first of all, I would like to, inform the community that I have 17 years working for the department, for Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. I've been, wearing different hats. I started as a community service worker in which I was responsible to go out in the community and educate the public about services and the importance of reaching out to services, especially if they were dealing with a mental health issue or mental health problem. So I did provide a lot of education. Then, throughout the years, I gathered experience, and which that led to be promoted as a quality improvement specialist. And I became the, throughout the years, I became the patient's rights advocate for this department. Recently, this Saturday is going to be my 1 year anniversary as a behavioral health therapist.
Oh, but, congratulations.
Thank you. And, throughout my experience here at the Department of Health, Department of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services has given me the education and the knowledge, meeting people who are in high need of receiving services. One of the things that also motivates me is that we all have family, and we all, we can see that within our family, there is also need. And we have lost family that never, reach out to services, right? So actually, that is one of my motivations to proceed with this career as a behavioral health therapist, and also to serve the community for so long, for 17 years now. So it's about help, reaching out, educating, and providing the best service that I could give to my community. Also, you mentioned, what are some of my hobbies that I do for self? Well, I do self-care. I think family is really important. It's like spending time with my family, my husband, my family, my granddaughter. I have a granddaughter. She's 3 years old. And also keeping my mind busy, doing productive and positive, activities. Of course, applying what I promote here and what I educate my clients with. So that's basically what I do. So.
Amazing. Amazing. Claudia, you don't only talk the talk, you walk the walk, right? And what I mean by that is you promote self-care, you promote mental health and well-being, and you yourself practice it. I love to hear that you have that balance in your life. It's so important, especially in a profession where you're helping others. A lot of times we don't do enough to help ourselves, and I'm happy that you do implement that as part of your daily routine. And that's something for the community to note. A lot of times we're so busy taking care of others, our loved ones, that we tend to forget that we need to take care of ourselves too. Having that balance in life, is everything. So I appreciate you sharing with us. Spending time with family is important, your granddaughter, and 17 years is what I'm hearing, right? With our department. That's amazing. That's quite a commitment to provide the service to our community. Mental health and men's mental health, talking about, getting into this topic a little bit more now. I think that even in 2025, with so much information that we have available, there could still be stigma. And not that there could be, I think there still is stigma about men seeking mental health treatment. I'm a guy myself, and I have brothers, I have friends and colleagues, and I think that there's not enough conversation about men and seeking mental health services because of the stigma associated to it. And it's something I'm really interested in talking to you about today. So, in your opinion or in your professional experience, would you say that men are like less likely to seek mental health treatment?
Yes, that's correct. Throughout my experience, not only as a behavioral health therapist, but throughout my service, under this organization, some of the barriers that I have seen is, you mentioned it, stigma, you mentioned another keyword, we forget about ourselves. And everything comes or starts since we were little, Why? Because in our, and within our families, there are some instances that parents they give you responsibilities at a very young age. For instance, I am Generation X. I don't know what generation you're on, but in Generation X, I remember, like I said, family experiences. I remember family, friends, parents of my friends saying, especially giving the message directly to a little boy. I'm talking about a 7-year-old little boy who has been told or who was told that, if I ever away, for instance, if your mom and I get divorced, if we get separated, or if I'm not around anymore, you're the next person responsible of taking care of this family. Imagine, putting that in a 7-year-old little boy responsibilities, and now that you're going to be responsible of assisting your mother and supporting your siblings, and you grew up with that. Another thing that I learned throughout my development and also my professional life is that men don't cry. Men need to be tough. They need to be strong. Why? Because men, according to our society, they are the providers. They always have to be the providers. Therefore, they have to be strong-minded. Okay. So, and when it comes to mental health, when it comes to mental health, they carry those beliefs, those norms since they were so little. So now that they are grown-ups, they are adults, it's hard for them to admit that there is something happening to them, and it's hard for them to accept, that help. especially if I go and I tell them, hey, there's help, you can reach out, here's the number, you can call, you know. And then one of the things that I also learned from society is, you know, not learn from society, but stigma plays a huge role for men not to seek services.
Right, right.
And there's a list. It's a huge list that I can provide not only a presentation, but a training for a whole day. Okay. So also it has to do with society. For instance, society, what are some of the expectations that society has for a man?
Yeah, I think definitely. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if that was a rhetorical question, but you know, some of the things that you're mentioning, by the way, I'm a millennial. I know you mentioned that you're Generation X. But yeah, definitely some of the things that you're mentioning, you know, growing up, I saw them myself as a Hispanic male. Some of those expectations society puts on us a lot of times is like, you know, you have to be the breadwinner. You have to be employed and provide for your family. And if you're not doing so, there's something wrong. And I think that's something, a message that we often hear. And not only that, you know, a lot of times seeking, whether it's mental health, medical attention or just medical attention in general, mm-hmm. kind of dealing with it, right? Like, oh, you know what? I woke up today not feeling so great, but I'm going to push through because I got to make it into work. I got to pay the bills. And a lot of men in our society don't have the privilege of having, you know, paid time off. So no work means no pay. And I've seen that, right? Especially in our community where a lot of the men in our community may work, you know, doing field work. If you don't go in and work that day, you may not be getting paid depending on what you do, for the company. So those are some of the things that I've heard, but I'm interested in hearing more of what your, profession has taught you.
Yes. Some of the things that I've learned from the community, this is coming from the community, Alfonso, is that, you know, when it comes to, you know, the expectation of our society, like, for instance, for men, specifically for men, is that you have to be the provider. You have to be strong. You have to be, you know, always, you know, upfront, you know, taking care of things. Okay. So on the other hand, I have asked the community, you know, what if a man reach out or seeks mental health services? How will society see that? And how will society label that man for seeking out services? There was, my experience, there was a huge list of labels. And one of them I can say is weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Not strong enough. Not manly enough. You know, without realizing that, you know, seeking out for help, treatment, it will make, actually it will help that man to have a better quality of life, and it will be more productive, and it will help on not only with his mental health, and will help him something that you mentioned earlier, physical health, because they go hand in hand. Physical, mental health, they go hand in hand. Okay. So, yeah, society. And another thing that I, you know, that I learned throughout my working with the community and also doing my research, we also sabotage ourselves, you know. In this case, men, they have their own auto stereotypes. What if I go to behavioral health? What if I go to get services? What if I see a psychiatrist? Okay, so auto stereotypes is I am crazy. Mm-hmm. That's one of the first words that come to mind. I am weak. I am not good enough, you know, without realizing that, you know, treatment is open for everybody, and it's, you know, it could help, you know, men, women, children, you know. Another thing that I wanted to add is that my experience as a behavioral health therapist, I have met clients that, for instance, they have been carrying trauma since they were little. Okay. They were little and, you know, trauma in regards to domestic violence, trauma because of sexual abuse, negligence, verbal abuse, physical abuse, you know. And I have met individuals who they have come to me and met me for the first time as a therapist, and they say, Claudia, you're the first person I ever opened up and talked about my past trauma. And they just, you know, say, at the age of 5, at the age of 4, I was sexually abused. I have never expressed this to anybody else. And then what happened throughout his, throughout this person's life? Well, they have to be tough. They have to, you know, as a protection, as a man, they hide it. And they start engaging into high risk behaviors, addictions, gang related, you know, history in prison, coming in and out from prison, from jail. And then say, you know, when they come and finally come in and get the help, they say, I've been covering my emotions for so long. And a good example could be Alfonso covering their emotions for 40 years.
Right.
45 right. years suffering a mental health. And we're talking about not only depression and anxiety, we're talking about trauma, you know, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, you know. And then once they see that there is help, you can sense their relief, you know, their relief that I finally found someone or a program that is going to give me the right help. Okay. So it's something that not only happens during our adult years, but also it's something that it has been carrying throughout, you know, some man's developmental stages.
And Claudia, you know, a lot of what you're mentioning, I'm hearing a lot of self-imposed barriers that, you know, men are putting. And it's intergenerational. It's taught between generations, right? From our parents to our grandparents and so on, you know, going back generations, just having this, even in our community, especially, right? The machista that, you know, a man's man. And basically like my word is the final word. These barriers that we're trying to break down and we're trying to, you know, demonstrate that there's a better way of living if we take care of ourselves. And we don't only see this in mental health, just like we talked about, we see it in physical health, right? Mm-hmm. How many times do we hear a story of a family member who maybe knew that something wasn't right physiologically, physically in their body, mm-hmm. And waited until it was too late, where it was just so physically gruesome or painfully gruesome that they finally went to the doctor and it's like, you know what, that this was a tumor. We need to take care of this now. Mm-hmm. And just the way that happens in physical health, I'm hearing, you know, the importance of seeking out mental health services early on is important. So we don't have those unhealthy coping mechanisms like resorting to drinking, for example, right? Using illicit substances or gambling or some of these other vices that, you know, we may play into to help overcome some of these traumas that men, you know, such as myself, may have gone through.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And one of the things that you mentioned something really, really interesting, you know, physical health. And it's actually for our human, especially for our culture and for other cultures, is very easy to talk about a physical diagnosis. Oh, I was diagnosed with cancer and I'm going to start chemotherapy pretty soon. Or I was diagnosed with diabetes. I have to change my diet and start taking these medications. But when it comes to mental health, we don't talk about it. We don't express. We don't open up. Why? Because we're so scared and afraid of being judged by our own family members, you know? And that's true, you know? But, you know, unfortunately, we, like you mentioned earlier, we are in 2025. And still, there's a lot of stigma out there, you know, a lot of information misinformed about, you know, the benefits of seeking out for services, specifically mental health services. You know, and also there are the two things that you don't talk about in your family, especially in the Hispanic family. I'm talking about the Hispanic,
right.
Is that you don't talk about sex and you don't talk about mental health. It's a taboo. Yes. It's a taboo. And unfortunately, those two topics should be important to be, you know, to be talked about when you're having dinner or when you're having a family gathering. And then, it's important to address it, you know. Therefore, you know, that person who is suffering from the mental health, mental health issue could feel supported, because that's basically what they need. They need that support person, to have that support person around them. Therefore, treatment can be also beneficial, and also they can proceed and, you know, continue coming to services. Having that support person, it's really important. Okay.
So I know, go ahead, Claudia. I don't want to cut you off.
Go ahead, Alfonso. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, we're almost done with the first segment, and this is just a robust conversation. I'm excited to continue talking about it. You know, we talked about men being a little bit being less likely to seek out mental health treatment, the stigma associated with it, you know, these self-imposed barriers, and also barriers imposed by the community. And you even started touching up on it, like the unhealthy coping mechanisms, right? Resorting to what's it called? Maybe gambling or drinking, substance use in general. And so when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, your experience in speaking to men and what was the breakthrough for them to actually seek the service, because at one point in time they actually decided, you know what, I do want to seek out the service. I want to get help. I want to know more about that, so our community, the men in our community, know, you know, how other men got to the point of saying, yes, I'm going to get the help that I need. Because I think a lot of our listeners, I'm hoping men out there, when you tune in, keep listening, because this is important. It's okay to seek help. It's okay to talk to somebody about things that we've gone through in our past. So Claudia, briefly, we have a few minutes before we end. We can go ahead and start that topic, and we'll pick it up wherever we leave off. But tell us about, you know, some of these experiences that you've had with the individuals that you've worked.
Mm-hmm. Some of the experiences that I have with the individuals that I work is that, for instance, a topic that comes to mind is addictions. You did mention gambling. But right here, when I meet with my clients, the majority, I can say 80%, 85% of the clients that I serve, they have a dual diagnosis. They have a mental health diagnosis and also a substance use diagnosis. Okay. So one of the experiences that I have is that, for instance, men, when they don't seek services, they start self-medicating. And it's not that they'll start self-medicating a month ago or a year ago. Actually, they start self-medicating since a very young age. I'm talking about when they were 12 years old, 13 years old. They start, you know, I do like a timeline with them. Okay. And then throughout the timeline, little by little, I am identifying that, you know, the drug, it gets stronger year by year. Like, for instance, stronger, what I mean is they start with cannabis, alcohol, and then 2-3 years later, they start using opioids. You know, opioids could be prescribed medication. Of course, that is not prescribed for them. Mm-hmm. They start using methamphetamine. They start using cocaine. They start vaping, you know, and some of the questions that I have asked is like, you know, can you please tell me the reason why you started using drugs? And it's related to their past trauma. It's always related to their past trauma. And also another answer that I get from them is that to numb my symptoms.
Yes.
We're talking about anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, you know, because, for instance, a person who's diagnosed with bipolar, if they take cocaine, is that it minimizes the intensity of their symptoms. It's funny, but that's something that I've learned from the population that I work with. But yes, it's instead of men, the majority of the men that I have worked with, it's that, okay.
So Claudia, I appreciate you giving us all this information. We're gonna take a brief break really quick. Mm-hmm. So everybody out there listening, please join us. We're with Claudia Quintanilla, behavioral health therapist. We're talking about men's mental health on the radio show. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Bringing community mental health issues to your radio. Listen each Sunday morning to KXO AM 1230 at 7 a.m. and now on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Or log on to KXORadio.com for a 5-minute podcast highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. This program is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5. Let's Talk About It is presented as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Hello, Imperial Valley. Welcome to Let's Talk About It. Thank you for joining us after the brief break that we had. We've been interviewing Claudia Quintanilla, a behavioral health therapist here with Imperial County Behavioral Health. Again, my name is Alfonso Ruiz, your host for today. We're talking about men's mental health. And before we took a brief break, we really took a deep dive into this topic from the beginning, you know, some of the stigma associated with it, with men's mental health, the stigma associated to seeking out treatment, and, you know, even some of the self-imposed barriers that us as men put based off of our upbringing. And just so the community knows, you know, some of the data that we're going to be sharing today, it indicates that only 1 in 4 men that experience a mental health issue will seek professional help. And depression in men often goes unrecognized. It may show as anger, irritability, or withdrawal instead of sadness. And having our professional Claudia Quintanilla here with her experience, it's something that we really want to talk more about. Tell us a little bit about this data, Claudia, and what it indicates when it comes to men and mental health.
Yes. So, you mentioned something that men, the way they manifest their depression is through irritability, explosive behaviors. They could be very violent towards verbally and physically. Okay. So the stats that I gathered was that through men account for about 10% of the patients. Actually, this is something that it's never mentioned, but also men suffer from bulimia and anorexia. Men with an eating disorder are less likely to seek professional help, you know, falling in a diet, a strict diet, excessive exercise. That could be a red flag, you know. Tough men, let's see here. Over 6 million men suffer from depression per year. That's a huge number, 6 million. But male depression often goes underdiagnosed. Okay. More than 3 million men in the United States have panic disorder, agoraphobia, and any other phobias. That's something that I have identified, you know, here with my patients, that when they suffer from anxiety, they also suffer from panic attacks. And additionally to PTSD.
Yeah.
2.3 million Americans are affected by bipolar disorder, and an equal amount of men and women develop the illness. The age of onset of men is between 16 to 25 years old. So this is the age group that when a man could be diagnosed with bipolar. Okay. One of the leading causes of disability in America is schizophrenia, you know, psychotic features. Approximately 3.5 million people in the United States have been diagnosed, and 90% of those who are diagnosed by age 30 are men.
Yeah, you know, I want to touch up on something that really caught my eye there. Though men account for 10% of patients with bulimia or anorexia, men with an eating disorder are less likely to seek professional help. Mm-hmm. That really sticks out because I was reading something a couple months back about how we're seeing more men who want to have a certain physique mm-hmm. going through extreme measures to get that physique, whether it be taking performance enhancing drugs or, you know, maybe resorting to bulimia or not eating, you know, limiting the amount of calories that they're eating, really counting those. And we're seeing this more often, right? And I think that the ideal image of a man that we see in the United States, it's, you know, Captain America, for example. Everybody yes. wants to be a Captain America.
Yes.
And, you know, even myself at 6'1", 175 pounds, I know that I'm not going to be looking like Captain America unless my job is to be Captain America. And it's hard, I think, as a man to kind of come to terms with that. And that really stuck out to me with that data, because I think it's something that we are starting to see a lot with our youth and our young adult population. Mm-hmm. And have you seen this, you know, yet, like personally yet, in your profession or just kind of also through your research is something that you're aware of?
Throughout my research, you know, what I see in my, the population that I serve is that they also not only bulimia and anorexia, but also compulsive eaters. You know, it's binge eating. You know, binge eating, it's also a, it's an eating disorder, you know. Binge eating without anorexia features is that, you know, you're overeating, and you're trying to, you know, and by eating, it becomes an addiction as well. And by eating, you're trying to suppress your feelings, anxiety, depression, you know, isolation. And the way you cope is by eating. And it's not eating healthy food. It's eating, you know, a lot of carbs, you know, like for instance, fast food, you know, comforting food. You know, that it's, you know, we do all know that it's not healthy, you know, and also that contributes to our mental health, you know, because if we're not eating healthy, we're not exercising, that can also contribute to our mental and physical health. Okay.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I did mention, actually yesterday to, the other radio show that I was part of, that it's important, you know, it's part of your self-care, you know, and if you go to the doctor, the first thing that the doctor is going to say, you need to get yourself on a diet, exercise, this and that. And then you, instead of feeling better, you know, you get out from that doctor's office feeling worse. So it's recommended to come to therapy, seek for services, because there might be issues that haven't been resolved. And the way you're coping with those issues is by overeating.
So I'm hearing, Claudia, that there could be like underlying issues that maybe our doctor from physical health, right, our primary, may not be able like to easily identify. They just see the data as far as like your labs indicate you have high cholesterol due to your diet. You need to, you know, cut that back. But really, underlying issue may be, you know, I'm actually dealing with something, right? I'm trying to cope with something. I'm processing something in my own way. But my own way as a guy is to like overeat, you mm-hmm. know, just indulge in the family pack from the hamburger stand, right? Getting four fries, four burgers, four hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that I'm dealing with it. And I feel better per se, but in actuality, I'm actually feeling worse every time I'm doing this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. That's powerful. So that's when, you know, these are some of the signs like, hey, you know what? Let me go talk to someone. Am I hearing that right?
Yes, that's correct. And it goes hand in hand with drugs, illicit drugs, alcohol, you know, because also overeating is an addiction, you know. You know, we, a lot of our clients, when they have a dual diagnosis, they have expressed, you know, this is the way I cope with my feelings, because the drugs have been helping me to numb what I'm feeling. But it got to the point that now is causing me some issues. not only mental, but also physical issues, liver issues, you know, kidney issues, heart problems, you know, cardiovascular, you know, they're in dialysis now because they have spent so many years without seeking treatment and self-medicating with a specific drug. Okay. And that addiction has taken them to have physical issues, chronic physical issues. Yes. So it's important for our men to seek out for professional help. There's help. There's a lot of help.
And I think, you know, some of the types of help that we have, you know, kind of transitioning from now I've identified that maybe I need to go talk to somebody or get some kind of help. What can help? Can you give us a little bit more details about that?
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about therapy, medication, combinations of both? What do you think would be the most beneficial?
I think, you know, the most beneficial is by giving us a call. They can call Behavior Health, Imperial County Behavior Health, or they can go to their nearest clinic. We have satellite clinics throughout the Imperial County. And they can go to the offices and ask for any, you know, for a brochure. We all have brochures, you know, all the offices have brochures, or to call directly to our number, which is the area code 442-265-1525. And then staff who answers the phone, you may request information to be sent via mail to your house or to a P.O. box. Or you can say, you know what, I would love to go and pick it up and we can meet in a certain office. You know, we have all those services. We are available, you know, and we have that flexibility as well. So therefore, that community can be identified, especially the man, you know, since it's the topic is men and mental health, you know, men, you can call us and request that information from us. You know, therefore, you can have an idea of the services that we offered and the benefit that you will have.
And it just starts. It starts with that, right, Claudia? Just picking up the phone, and calling 442-265-1525 and just saying, you know, I want to see if I can qualify for services, right?
Yes, that's correct. Another thing is that, you know, you can call, we have an after hours number, the 1-800-817-5292. That number is available 24/7, and you may request the information from our answering service, and the staff will be more than happy to assist you and send you that information as well. So, yes, there are different ways and avenues where men can reach out and get the help and also be educated before they make a decision of seeking out for or making an appointment with us. Yes.
Okay, great. And I mean, I think, you know, just touching up on some of the things that we've discussed today, you know, I was just thinking back about, you know, even within our family, I think that's why it's so hard for men sometimes to go get help because of those expectations. But something that I hear often also from our community is, I want my kids to have a better life than the one that I had. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that also goes back to our mental health. Like, how are we doing emotionally? We have to be those agents of change for all those men hearing in the community. You know, we have to be those agents of change. If we want better for our children, for our young little boys to grow up, to be better men than what we are today, it starts with us, right? Just seeking help, getting the treatment that we need to be the best version of ourselves. Because something that caught my eye was depression could come out as aggression.
Yes.
And you mentioned that, and I was like, wow, like, you know, I work in this field as well, but it's always just so nice to reflect and recognize that these symptoms may present themselves very differently from what someone may think.
Another thing that I wanted to mention before, you know, before we conclude our radio show this afternoon is that, you know, Some of the things that I've learned from the population that I serve, which is adults and you know, men, is that one of the things that I do with therapy is that I do conduct a genogram. It's like a family tree. Okay. One of the things that I try, actually my goal when I complete the genogram with my clients is that, you know, to allow them to see that where is the, you know, the issue coming from. It's a generational pattern. You know, we identify addictions, we identify mental health, diagnosis or issues. We identified, behaviors. I have been able to identify narcissistic behaviors. Karen's diagnosed with schizophrenia and bipolar at the same time. And something that I'm very pleased to tell my clients is that you're the first one seeking out services and you're breaking that pattern. And you should be proud of yourself because you're breaking that pattern. You're breaking that chain.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's such a great place to kind of end this segment, right? On a positive note, men breaking the pattern within their generation, according to the family tree. We're going to pick this up in our last segment for the day. We're talking to Claudia Quintanilla, behavioral health therapist, talking about men's mental health.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It. If you have questions about services Imperial County Behavioral Health may offer that deal with today's show topic, please feel free to call 760-482-4000. Let's Talk About It is presented weekly on KXO AM 1230, FM 107.5, and KXOradio.com as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Hello, Imperial Valley. Thank you for joining us. We're in our last segment for today. Before our break, we're speaking to Claudia Quintanilla, behavioral health therapist with Imperial County Behavioral Health, on the very important topic of men's mental health. And we ended talking about, you know, men taking that next step and breaking the cycle, the intergenerational cycle sometimes of men not seeking services for themselves, not taking care of their mental health. Men that have decided that they want to do better for themselves and for their family, for those men that do have family and maybe young children that they want to set a better example for. So Claudia, you were talking to, you gave us a lot of information and I love it. I think our men are going to benefit from listening to this and our community in general. Is it ever too late to seek services?
No, it's never too late. Never too late. And unfortunately, Alfonso, that's a very good question, because doing my research and working with the community, you know, actually we have services available for ages from 0 to 65 plus, and it's never too late. Unfortunately, there's, you know, if we talk about the older population, actually the older population is the one who has the highest rate in suicide. And I'm just sharing this information because I'm a suicide safe talk trainer. But yes, according to my research, yes, that's the highest percentage. But there's no limit in age, and it's never too late to seek out for help.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, just hearing that, I can see, you know, our older population, especially as we get older, you know, we start losing, maybe our loved ones, right? Our partner, people that really mean a lot to us within our community, because we're getting to an older, point of our lives and we start to feel maybe a little bit more isolated. But that's why, you know, we have services, be part of a community, and seek them out. And we can also link you to other agencies within the community where our older population can, you know, have a daily trip out with others that, you know, are maybe going through the same things. So Claudia, let's say, you know, today's the day I decide I'm going to call behavioral health. I'm going to really just move forward. I want to schedule my appointment. What should I expect? What should I expect as a guy calling in to get my appointment, because I was brave enough to take that next step?
Mm-hmm. Well, when you call and make the appointment, staff will, what they're going to do, they're going to give you a date and time to meet with a professional. In that case, the first person that you will meet, it will be a behavioral health therapist. You might be meeting me because I do also conduct the intake assessments. So what to expect on your first meeting or your first appointment is, of course, you're going to be completing some paperwork. You're going to meet with a therapist, and the therapist is going to provide you with education about the process and how actually if you meet medical necessity, you know, if you do meet medical necessity, it's actually the therapist who's going to decide, will determine depending on the information shared by the individual. Okay. So one of the things that I do when I first meet the person is that I have my office. I have a, you know, very welcoming environment here in my office. Also, my, you know, my demeanor, my behavior, you know, I'll try my best to always make them feel welcome. And if this is not about me, it's about them, you know. And I start with questions. I start with questions, you know, questions directly to, you know, the reason why they're seeking services. Okay. Questions about symptoms, behaviors, you know, history of trauma, medical issues, you know. But one of the things that I really, really, you know, emphasize is that everything that you say here, it's confidential. And I always tell them this is a safe place where you can express yourself. Okay. So that's the first encounter, you know. Scheduling the appointment, coming to your appointment, and meeting with one of the behavioral health therapists to start a Kellyanne assessment, which we call intake assessment as well.
All right, so yeah, that's definitely a lot that goes in the first day, right? And how long should I expect like that appointment to last on average?
Mm-hmm. It will last 90 minutes. It depends on the need of the person. It could last longer, mm-hmm. but we have a total of 90 minutes. And if it takes a little bit longer, we can go up to 120 minutes.
Okay, great. And so let's say that, you know, I'm here with you and you do your assessment. I'm open. I'm honest. I'm telling you things that I'm going through. And you tell me, you know, Alfonso, you qualify for services. These are some of my recommendations. What could some of the recommendations be coming on your end as a clinician that's assessing?
Yes. Well, I'm assessing, I'm also assessing the client's needs. Like for instance, if I work with the population that I work with, we encounter a lot of homelessness. Okay. So automatically I'm thinking and processing, okay, this client will benefit from an initial nursing assessment, from an initial psychiatric appointment assessment. Of course, you know, expedited services such as targeted case management because it's at risk of homelessness or this person is already homeless. They're transient. I will shoot out an email right away and start communicating and care coordinating with staff, specifically with my supervisor. These are the needs. This is the client. I would like, if it's possible, for this client to meet with a case manager. Therefore, we can start providing and linking that person to community resources.
Okay. So the targeted case management is provided by this case manager who's going to be there to help me. If I'm looking to seek, you know, shelter, this is the person that would help me with that?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Especially if they need shelter, you know, motel vouchers. Also to be referred to SUD programs. That's another service that we do have. Be linked to a higher level of care, such as Jackson House Crisis Residential, due not only because they're homeless, but also to be stabilized with their mental health needs. You know, so yes, that's what I basically do when I meet with someone. Not only, oh, okay, you do medical necessity, and then next. No, I assess the whole, you know, the whole person.
So it's really a holistic approach,
you know? A holistic approach, yes.
Really looking at every need that me coming in might have that maybe even I didn't even realize that I needed, right? And I'm hearing that you work maybe with community partners to help link them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so let's say that I'm interested and you tell me, you know, Alfonso, you would really benefit. My recommendation is following through with the nursing assessment because I think medication support would be something that would be of benefit. And at that point, I'm thinking I'm not quite ready for medication support. I was really looking for just therapy. Is that an option?
That's an option, yes. And I educate them that it's part of the process. They still need to go through the initial nursing assessment. It's a requirement. And also through the initial psychiatric assessment, you know, because both professionals will further assess. And, of course, the client, we respect the client's decision. If the client doesn't want to take a medication for different reasons, we respect that because this is the client's treatment. It's not our treatment. It's their treatment, and they have the right to decide.
Excellent. So it really sounds like I'm in the driver's seat. As the individual seeking services, I'm in the driver's seat, and I'm the one, you know, with your assistance, you're helping me identify what I need. But if I'm not quite ready, I may be able to just start with therapy and, you know, in time may progress to realize, you know what, I do want to see a psychiatrist and I want to see how they can help me as well.
Yes, I have encountered those situations where they are only receiving therapy from me. And throughout therapy, they noted, you know, clients, especially men, noticed that they haven't improved. Learning coping skills have been help, but they still that they have, you know, they realize that they need that extra help, which is medication support. And what I do is like, okay, what I can do since you're still open to medication support, because you're always, you know, some of them, they're still open, even though they didn't want to proceed with medication or take medication. I tell them, okay, so let me see if I can get you a sooner appointment. Therefore, your doctor can assess you and also a nurse can assess you. Therefore, the doctor make a decision of which treatment will be beneficial for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but through therapy, it's like we're in the fifth, sixth, seventh session, and they say, Claudia, you know, the techniques are really working, but I feel that I need that extra help.
Definitely.
And automatically, that's what I do. I link them to medication support services.
And Claudia, you know, that really takes me back to just a comparison with physical health when we're going to our primary doctor. And, you know, as we get older, our bodies sometimes need a little bit of help, right? And even myself in my young age may need help in certain areas. So like the doctor is going to tell you, you know, these are your lab results. I see that there's a little bit of high cholesterol. I recommend taking cholesterol medication at a low dose just to help you, you know, get back to normalcy. And they may give you the option, you know, you can start now or we can revisit this in 6 months. And, you know, with diet and exercise, you could try to bring those numbers down. The example you gave with, you know, the individual going to therapy and, you know, in the 6-7 session, them realizing, you know what, I still need a little bit extra help, even though the coping skills that I'm learning here are really beneficial. We're processing things. I just still feel like I need that extra help. And that's when you can decide as the individual, I want to, you know, try medication support. Let me talk to the doctor. Let me get their opinion, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And you know, for all the men and listeners out there, I hope, you know, that really makes sense to everyone. You're the ones driving the vehicle. You're in the driver's seat and kind of in conjunction with the team, you know, such as Claudia, the therapist, helping decide what's best for you. Claudia, any final remarks before we end our show for today?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I just want to mention, you know, help, it's there. We serve different ages. You can reach out to Behavior Health. Also, I want to mention Casa Serena, Alfonso. That's a resource that is really helpful for our community. It has been really helpful since we opened. Casa Serena is like, for instance, if you're not open to services, you know, you can feel free to go to Casa Serena, and especially if you need to talk to someone, if you feel those high levels of stress and feel you need to talk to someone that is not a close family member, you know, just go out to Casa Serena, and they're open from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. And they're located at 202 North 8th Street, first floor. It's actually the three-story building. They're located on the first floor. But yes, we have a variety of services for different ages. Everybody's welcome.
Thank you, Claudia. And yeah, Casa Serena is such a great resource. Whether you're new to services, looking to seek out services, or already have services, their doors are open for everybody. They have some amazing calming rooms, which are very therapeutic. It's almost like if you're going into like a mini spa. That's the way I like to describe it. They have, you know, just the scents that you smell in a spa, just to be very relaxed, that relaxing music. So for those of you in the community that are interested in checking it out, go. You know, it's a service that's available to everyone in the community, especially for you men. And this is taking us to the end of our show. For those men that are listening, and for just families in general, you know, men, be the agents of change for your family. If you think that you may benefit from speaking to somebody, if you've identified that, you know, I want to take a few things off my chest, I want to talk about a few things, seek help. Behavioral health is here. We have a great deal of staff that are really here to help those that are seeking out the services, such as Claudia Quintanilla. Thank you so much for being on our show today, for giving us all this information. Just one last reminder, for services, you can call 442-265-1525 or toll free at 1-800-817-5292. This is Alfonso Ruiz, your host for today. Hear us next time. Take care.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on KXO AM 1230 and each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on FM 107.5. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio. This program features weekly community mental health issues on your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. Our co-hosts for today's program were Patricia Arevalo-Caro and Alfonso Ruiz. Thank you for listening.